On this special episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, recorded during the 2018 California Ambulatory Surgery Association annual meeting in Huntington Beach, California, we talk about some of the major takeaways from this year's conference and meet with the leadership of CASA to discuss the current activities of the association and the issues that the ASCs in California are facing.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a biweekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource the regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys. Welcome to episode 35 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for Monday, September 10th, 2018, recording from the CASA Conference in Huntington Beach, California. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS. I'm here with John Gailey, the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry published through Eden Group Development, a nationally known speaker on all aspects of the industry, and the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, which provides regulatory oversight services to ambulatory surgery centers throughout the United States. We are here in a beautiful place.
Absolutely. I keep forgetting, I've been here a couple times before, and I keep forgetting how nice this is as a resort. Yeah. And in between sessions, we can look out on the ocean. Last night, we had a wonderful meal with our friends at SIS over at one of the restaurants on campus here. It was just a wonderful, wonderful time.
Yeah, last time that we were here, I was here as a guest.
That's so right.
I was in the pool while you were doing
it. Now you can't do that anymore.
No, but it's been really nice meeting everybody and some of the people we've talked to. It's been really great.
All of these conferences allow us the opportunity to meet up with friends that we've met over the years and to reconnect with what's going on. Mm-hmm. So this is a special podcast of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, which we are recording from a studio that has been set up here in Huntington Beach. And the purpose here is really to focus on the state of California. So this podcast is really designed for California surgery centers and anybody that's interested in what's going on in the state. And the beginning section here, we're going to talk a little bit about our observations and our takeaways from the conference. And then later on, we're going to interview the members of the board of directors and the executive director of CASA to see what their perspective is about what's going on in the state and also for them to talk about the activities of the state association. I should note that with the equipment that we flew down here for the conference, we've had a little bit of technical difficulties for which we apologize. And then just the issue of recording in not studio conditions here. So you will hear background noise. You're going to hear conference attendees who are walking past our door and the inevitable air conditioning coming down on every once in a while. So we've done our best to get rid of as much of the background noise as we can, but some of the recordings will have a lot more than you're probably used to. Yeah, and I really want to thank the California Association for their hospitality, for giving us this room to work in throughout the entire time that we're here, and of course to help schedule our interviews with the various individuals that we've talked to. And to talk to the board of directors. So this has really given a great opportunity, a great experience. And of course, the conference itself has been fantastic. So, so we're recording this session on Thursday afternoon. We have attended, some of the major speeches already, and just want to kind of do some of the takeaways that we've had from this conference. And Sue, you and I were actually in tears together.
Yeah, I think the
yesterday
whole
for the first two sessions. So the session that brought almost everybody in the room to tears was by
Ridley Barron.
Ridley Barron, who lost his wife and his
17-month-old son
due to a car accident coming back from Hilton Head Island in probably about 17 years ago, I think it was. And it his story is heartrending, but it is a great story for those of us in the industry who try to understand the other side.
Because his wife died instantly, but his little boy was injured and then later died from a medical error.
Right.
And he is just, he's such an amazing person. He's very forgiving. He understands that, you know, accidents happen, but he really just wants to get the message out there of just what it does to people. You know, it just makes it so much more meaningful when you hear everything he went through.
Right.
It's amazing.
So we're going to do a special episode and have the interview that we did with him kind of focus on his message here. But I did want to talk about, I think he had like seven takeaways from this, but we'll just mention very quickly. One is making sure you have an open and friendly environment and a friendly face at the front.
Be willing to answer questions. Let people know, you know, that they can ask any questions. Even something as simple as easy parking,
right.
A clean welcoming area that it really, even in his very distressed state at that time, you know, he just was so thankful he didn't have to drive around looking for parking and right. yet he had met the receptionist. He felt didn't look very open to questions.
Right. And he remembers
that made a big difference
17 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, those impressions lasted a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Something else he said is that, you know, he suggested that you tell the patient, instead of saying, "Hey, I'm glad you're here," which I think sometimes we do accidentally.
Mm-hmm. They're not so glad to be
there.
They're
not so glad to be there. And he said, tell them up front that we know that they probably really don't want to be here, but that we promise that we will give them the best possible care and encourage them to ask questions. What a great message there. And a great way of kind of turning that on end and probably immediately soliciting their...
Mm-hmm. And that kind of ties in with one of his other points, you know, not really going in order here, but to solicit questions, because often people, you know, we get so used to speaking in medicalese
terms,
or whatever that we don't even realize that people aren't even understanding what we're saying.
Right.
And, you know, most people are going to be embarrassed or they just are too proud to say, "Hey, what are you talking about?" You know, they'll just nod their head,
right.
Figure I'll go home and I'll figure it out or I'll look at the paper and then they leave and they don't have the instructions that they need. So, you know, just being willing to really check and make sure people understand.
And another thing that he suggested was be honest with him at all times. So, I guess during his episode, they were not always honest with him about the condition of his son and his prognosis for the future. So one of the other things that came out in the course of the investigation into this is that the hospital where his son died had undergone a huge program to reduce the number of sentinel events and that they had reduced the number of sentinel events in the hospital in that year from 14 from the previous year to one. That year. Unfortunately, the one was his son's death. And he made the point that to a patient, the only acceptable level of errors is one. Very simple message there, but a good point here is that, you know, we should always be striving for, you know, absolute perfection when it comes to, you know, medical errors and sentinel events.
And that was one of the points that he made also, just talking about how errors happen. In the accident, a friend had mentioned, I guess, a while later that because the cars were going a certain speed, that if there had been a half-second delay, either one of them, that this might never have happened. And it kind of registered to him that, you know, all these tiny decisions that we make, not double checking a medication or rushing or just being overworked, all these little things can add up to this huge life-changing tragedy,
right.
You know? So he just wanted to remind people to always be conscious of what you're doing.
And that kind of leads into the other speech that was on at the beginning of the conference on Wednesday from William Eisenberg, who is a doctor, OBGYN doctor at Sutter Health, who is in charge of patient safety at that institution. And he did a wonderful session entitled,
"Am I running a surgery center or a nuclear power plant?"
That's right, which was a great title, my favorite title, and one that I'm going to hopefully learn to, you know, make more creative titles for my sessions in the future. And he talked about the complexity of the various systems that are out there and encouraged organizations to become what he referred to as a high reliability organization. And high reliability organizations are organizations such as nuclear power plants and airlines that deal with very dangerous situations on an ongoing basis where the failure could be catastrophic. You know, the failure mm-hmm. of an airplane falling from the sky could kill hundreds of people instantly. Same thing with a nuclear power plant. And these high reliability organizations have certain attributes, which he referred to, and there's six that I just want to mention very quickly. One, preoccupation with failure. In other words, constantly trying to figure out what would happen and how they work to eliminate the possibility of some type of a failure in your system. Mm-hmm. And continuing with his high reliability organization attributes, the reluctance to simplify, which is an interesting one. We're always trying to find ways to improve our operations. So we try to simplify things. My mm-hmm. favorite concept, you know, keep it simple, stupid. And what he's saying here is that, you know, perhaps not always simplifying things, mm-hmm. especially when they involve life threatening decisions.
Yeah,
not always
really
a good thing.
Really dig in and find out.
Sensitivity to operations. In other words, making sure that you're always, you know, sensitive to the way you're doing things. Deference to expertise. In other words, bringing in, you know, experts to help you through these processes. You know, it's one of the reasons people hire our company is we've seen a lot of these situations over time, and it's experience that often you don't get being a single administrator in a single surgery center. Collaborative efforts. In other words, being able to challenge as well as support each other, and a mm-hmm. commitment to resilience. In other words, getting through these situations. One of the issues that, you know, are often brought up is the people that go through these catastrophic failures often just, you know, they leave the industry at that point. Mm-hmm. And part of it is because either they get fired because of the incident, or they, you know, they're so traumatized by the process that they themselves leave. So a big part of his message was that we need to allow our employees to feel safe in bringing things up that are a potential for causing harm, and celebrate when we discover issues before they become catastrophic, and not punish people for, you know, having negative outcomes. Help, you know, try to learn from those processes and identify root cause analysis to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and then take that extra step to do a make some procedural changes that
right.
so that they won't happen again. Not just, he's, you know, he really emphasized that last step.
And then this morning we had a session entitled California National Legislative Update, and it included William Prentice, who's the CEO of the Ambulatory Surgery Center Association, and Bryce Daugherty, who is a partner with KP Public Affairs, who is the organization that helps CASA with their regulatory issues and legislative issues in the state of California. And so we of course, work very closely with ASC Association, and Bill has spoken a number of times about this issue in the past, but he brought up kind of the very brief discussion of the Kaiser News article, noting that that article flamed out very quickly, mm-hmm. and they also noted that they had been following the social media's response to this and found very little activity there. So this article really did disappear very quickly from the public eye. His feeling, though, is that Kaiser is truly out to get the ambulatory surgery centers that are physician-owned, and that they really have a problem with for-profit medicine. And he feels that there probably is going to be more of this into the future. And Bill reminded the centers also to make comments on the new CMS regulations that have been proposed for 2019, which we've talked about extensively. They are due by September 24th. Please feel free to make comments. If you go to the ASCAssociation.org website, they provide some example letters that you can send in response to these proposed changes.
And he had some concerns, didn't he, that although it's much easier not to have to report on all of these different areas, that, you know, having those numbers can sometimes be a really good way to prove what good care you're giving. So, you know, it's just another.
He actually mentioned, Sue, that the association is considering asking the CMS to put back the first four measures, ASC 1 through 4, which are basically the measures that would indicate that something had gone wrong, okay. such as a burn, a fall, wrong side surgery, mm-hmm. et cetera. So we're going to hear very shortly as to whether they're going to actually make that recommendation. But okay. they do feel that removing those in particular probably is not necessarily good for the industry, that we really yeah. want those to continue. And he actually said that they're going to probably recommend that they expand it to non-Medicare cases also. And of course he praised the movement from updates to the rates based upon the consumer price index to the hospital market basket, and the reduction in the device intensive rate to 30% from 40% for those procedures that have heavy duty devices involved in them. Then there was a discussion on the state level of various issues going on in California, and probably the one that raised the most discussion was the possibility of a single-payer system in California. And Bryce did indicate that he really sees no chance of that happening in California, simply, one of the main reasons is because it would probably bankrupt the state. But second is that while it's heavily supported by the California Nurses Association, it really doesn't necessarily have a lot of traction anywhere else right now because of the political fallout that would come from it. So I think we nationally are keeping an eye on what's going on in California because that's probably the only area where the single payer is really picking up a lot of steam from our perspective. So lastly, Bill noted that there is no surgeon on the medical director panel at CMS. And one of the things that is probably causing some of our issues with CMS is the lack of understanding in CMS of the issues that surgeons face. So he's suggesting that we really kind of make a push toward trying to get a surgeon on that panel. Let's take a short break and we'll come back with the board of directors of CASA and the executive director and discuss issues that are going on in the state of California.
We are here with Beth LeBoyer, executive director of CASA. Peggy Wellman, the immediate past president, and she is now with United Surgical Partners. Michelle George, president-elect of CASA. She works for SCA. And Deborah Miller, current president, who is with AmSurg.
So, Beth, we're very excited to be here. Thank you so much for inviting us to participate in this conference. So we're doing a special episode here on the California State Association. I thought it would be a good thing for you to start by talking a little bit about what's going on with CASA membership and your meetings this year.
Well, we're really excited. There's a lot of energy around CASA right now. Our current membership is 330 facilities, our biggest ever. So that was really exciting. And we have close to 400 total when you count in the auxiliary members and the individual members as well. So exciting times for the industry and the association. And we're here this week for our 31st annual conference and our biggest ever. Over 400 attendees. Our last count was 440 plus 90 exhibitors.
This is an incredible place. We're at the Hyatt Regency in Huntington Beach. Beautiful place. Sue and I came in at 2 o'clock in the morning, by the way, so we're barely awake. But what a wonderful location. Do you always come here?
No, we rotate around California.
Okay.
Trying to geographically to make it convenient for our members.
And you have two big conferences this year, right?
We have our annual meeting, which is every September, and that's our large one.
Okay.
And then we have our infection prevention seminar in November, which is growing to be quite large because it has a great reputation for providing infection prevention training for surgery centers, helping them to meet Medicare certification. And then we usually have a spring seminar. We've been partnering with Nossaman to have a legal focus for the spring seminar.
Wonderful. And of course, with the infection prevention program, that's very much tied into and helping people prepare for the CAPE exam, which is coming up in October.
Exactly. In fact, this year we took the agenda around the CAPE standards. So as those ASC infection preventionists are receiving that education, they'll also be able to hopefully meet all those CAPE standards and help them to prepare for the exam.
That's wonderful. And we, by the way, the CAPE registration period just ended. And we believe we're somewhere around 100 registrants for the upcoming CAPE exam. So this is very exciting for all of us. As you know, I'm the immediate past president of BASC, which is the organization that oversees that. So we're very excited. And thank you so much on behalf of BASC for the work that you've done to make sure that we have educational programs toward this very important part of our industry.
Yeah, our pleasure. And it's just such important education. And BASC does great things for the industry. So I'd encourage any infection preventionist in a surgery center to investigate that CAPE exam.
Right.
Because I think that'll be a real value add to their center and their credentials.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, Beth, who are your major sponsors this year for the annual conference?
Well, we'd love to thank McKesson for being our premier sponsor. They've been our premier sponsor for several years now and so supportive of CASA. So they're a huge, huge partner and We really want to thank them for all of their support. Of course, we have 90 exhibitors and sponsors, so I'd be remiss to forget someone, but we just really appreciate our vendor support. They really help to make the meeting what it is.
Absolutely. These conferences are very expensive to put on, as I well know, so very good. So what are the benefits of CASA membership, and most importantly, how do you become a member?
Well, it's easy to become a member. You can join online through the CASA website at casurgery.org. I'd like to think one of our biggest benefits of membership is our CASA benchmarking. It's free to all of our members, and it allows them to benchmark their center against other centers in California. So it's California specific, and not only California specific, it's regionally specific. So that's one of the biggest benefits. The membership almost pays for that resource as well. Of course, we have our education offerings that we just discussed, and you know, the membership discounts for those are huge. And then we have our annual salary survey, which is so important because California is very different regionally. And so to get that information for your region is really helpful. And then, you know, some other things, our work comp calculator that helps with the operations of the surgery center. And, you know, some things that are harder to put a dollar to are the advocacy component of what CASA does for surgery centers. And we are the only voice out there advocating for surgery centers at the state capitol. So it's really huge.
And your wonderful newsletters and emails constantly coming in. Sometimes I find out from you before I find out from other sources, indeed, what's going on. So I appreciate all of that.
As a surgery center leader, having access to the most current advocacy information at the Capitol is very critical for us keeping our physicians informed. CASA as well has wonderful relationships with our regulatory bodies, the Medical Board of California, the California Department of Public Health that serves as CMS's arm and oversight for our Medicare Certified Surgery Center, and the relationships that Beth and her team have formed with those organizations have served us well. Another important benefit that is new is that we have started to publish a quarterly report that can be used at Surgery Center board meetings to highlight our advocacy efforts, some benchmarking results, and any other current events in California. And I encourage all our members to take advantage of that so that you keep your board, your medical executive committee, and your employees informed.
And that's great. That'll also help in your accreditation and your CMS certification to assure that the governing body has appropriate information and shows that they're actually looking at the benchmarking at the highest level. I love it. Thank you.
One of the things that CASA has been doing is every year CASA goes to Sacramento and we meet with local representatives to talk about the industry. And in addition, we partner with the National Association, and I think we've gone to D.C. now. It's probably about eight years, maybe more, and I've had the privilege of participating in all of those visits to D.C., and it's been very encouraging as we see over the years how legislators understand the benefits of ambulatory surgery and the benefits for the members as well as the government in saving dollars.
Right.
And, you know, we can talk more about the quality and safety versus a hospital setting.
It's very important right now that we, as the industry continues to grow, that we continue to show the legislators the importance of what we do in
Absolutely.
This industry and who we
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely. And I'll defer to my clinical colleagues for drilling down into the, you know, the details of the quality piece.
I'd like to add, because I too have been on a few of these visits, that I find it very challenging. And I find it really important that we continue to stay at that table, educating our legislators in terms of, you know, what do we actually do? We also have a grassroots program where we tour our legislators in some of our ambulatory surgery facilities. And there, it's almost always an aha moment for them when they realize that we are doing actual surgery in those facilities.
Right.
Many of them come into our buildings with the misconception that we do very minor things, or sometimes they completely misunderstand the purpose. Maybe they think that we run an ambulance service or that we draw blood. And we even had a comment
recently. We're doing a surgery on the road.
Yes, that too. But the most recent aha was someone asked if we did autopsies at our facility. So as we think about the turnover for our legislators, it's important that we stay at that table helping them to understand what services it is and also the quality that we can actually bring to our patients.
Right.
So what have been some of the major areas that you've been focusing on this past year?
I think in California, it can be confusing regarding oversight of surgery centers. In 2007, there was a decision called the Capon versus Shuri, where ASCs no longer fall under the California Department of Public Health for licensing. However, the California Department of Public Health, CDPH, does the oversight for any Medicare-certified surgery center. So even though they are not licensed, they still have the oversight of CDPH. And interesting enough, the licensure standards are the Medicare certification standards. So surgery centers that are Medicare-certified are all following those licensure standards. And then with physician ownership, the Medical Board of California also has oversight through the accrediting bodies. And so we like to say that there's, in some ways, dual oversight for surgery centers in California. And one thing CASA has been doing over the years is establishing strong relationships with the Medical Board of California and CDPH to work with them and make sure they understand surgery centers and that we can message, or if they're seeing areas where they need to communicate to surgery centers, that we can be that conduit for them and get that information.
As we worked on our legislative advocacy, we've been fortunate that there has not been many current issues that have negatively impacted outpatient surgery centers.
You probably better knock on wood about that.
We've been fortunate that we're a lower cost of care, and with the big focus in California about our healthcare dollars, we're able to position ourselves as a solution for more cost-effective healthcare. However, it's important that we remain vigilant because there's always a focus on physician ownership. There's focus on whether or not we have sufficient regulatory oversight or whether or not we have good, publicly reported, validated quality data.
And John, as you know, in our industry right now, there's a lot of focus on opioids and the impact that they have on our patients. And the ASC industry, led by CASA here in California, we're really following that. We want to make sure that we're at the height of awareness, and we want to make sure that we're providing all types of information and education to our members. And we're working closely with our medical staffs, and in particular, our anesthesia providers who are really in charge of pain management within an ASC. And we feel that our setting is a strong one for a possible solution relative to the opioid crisis and the best ways to kind of manage pain in relationship to an actual surgical procedure. Our patients don't stay very long. The length of stay is very short. So there isn't much reason for us to establish a dependency on narcotics. And we do everything that we can to properly assess the patient and make sure that we aren't further adding to a bad situation.
And we've done a couple episodes on the opioid crisis and how anesthesiologists can find ways to manage pain without an opioid afterwards. So I think you're right. I think the ASC industry has really taken a lead in at least making sure that we're not adding to the problem. I mean, we might not be able to solve the problem, certainly because of what we do, but we can not be furthering the issue anymore within our centers.
Absolutely. Our anesthesia providers are very supportive and well-trained in the methodologies of multimodal pain management. The regional blocks that they provide for the surgery almost eliminate the need for narcotics in most cases.
Right.
Another focus that CASA has been working on has been building relationships with large employer groups. Because of the cost of healthcare, many employer groups are now self-funded and they have high deductible plans, and there is a focus on wellness to keep the cost of healthcare down. So through many of the relationships that Beth and the rest of the team have worked on is with universities, large employer groups, and trying to work on a way to direct many of those cases into the ASC space. And so I think over the years, there has been a real focus in that area.
So along with that focus on large employers, we've developed as part of the CASA strategic plan a effort to keep our large payers informed about the type of procedures that we can do in our setting. We've been able to educate key decision makers within the payers so that they understand that we can do more complex cases that might require a little bit longer time in recovery. in a safe and efficient manner. The payers now often will look to us when they're looking at whether or not something could be appropriate for our setting.
So we all know that there was a recent article in the USA Today and then an article back in March about ambulatory surgery centers that really did not look very favorably on the industry. And one of the things that came up during that discussion at the ASC Association was, what are we doing in order to try to provide valid data that we can demonstrate our quality? Now, you've talked about your benchmarking data here. What else is going on in California that you think is helpful?
John, I agree that in terms of the article, I think the one thing that they point out that is valid is that we don't actually have a lot of quality data from the ASC world, good right. or bad. We just don't have it. So I think that's the focus for California and other states right now, is that we're looking for avenues to be able to put together the story of the quality that we can provide in an ASC. And currently, we are working in partnership with a large number of payers here in California. And we are additionally working with some researchers to look at the feasibility of putting together a study that looks out quality patient outcomes.
Wow.
So some of the things that we're looking at would be pulled from the payer's claims data. And we think that that's a valuable perspective, because one of the criticisms of the data that is out there for the ASC industry is that it's self-reported.
Right, right.
And if we were able to pull it from claims data, then I think it adds not only to the credibility, but when you think about a payer and the huge number of covered lives that one payer brings to the table, and when you bring multiple payers to the table, then that will create for us just a massive database that will allow us to begin to, I think, tell our story in a way that we haven't been able to tell to date.
Right. And you're going to use universities in order to try to add some more legitimacy to that.
Absolutely. Berkeley, while they haven't fully committed, is one of the universities that's at the table with us.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So as we all know, the proposed 2019 CMS regulations include some major changes this year. Most of them are pretty good. You know, some on the reimbursement side aren't so good. What do you find are the impact of those proposed regulations in California?
So from a quality reporting standpoint, those measures have to some degree been the backbone for our ASC industry's quality reporting.
Right.
Even though there have been some criticisms such as self-reported data, it still has been a go-to database for all folks.
Right.
So when our payers are asking how our centers are doing, they often look at that data. Consumers, even though it might be not well known to them, they actually have access to that data also. And providers, when they're deciding what setting they want to provide their cases, that's also data that they can look at. And as you know, we can all go in and we can look at the performance of an individual center. We can literally drop down to that level. So with the proposed removal of a significant number, but also some key types of measures, I wonder what the robustness of our program would look like on a go forward, while being topped out, because that's the reason that they would actually propose removing some of those, along with measure burden, administrative costs. I do think that they have really been able to tell a story of quality.
Well, it's a shame, actually, because what's happening is they're reducing our regulatory burden, which is great. But their argument is that we only want to be tracking measures where we can find some positive changes that can occur in the industry. And what they feel at CMS right now is that by eliminating those are things that we continuously show high quality. So it's not doing them any good because they can't find any negative information from it. But for the industry, that data is critical to show that we continue to have very high quality outcomes.
You know, we actually do agree with CMS in the sense that we want to track metrics where there's an opportunity for improvement, mm-hmm. because we truly want to be able to provide the highest level of service, both on an outcome side and experience side for everyone involved. However, I do think that those type of events are critical to being able to tell our story
right.
about quality.
The other uncertainty around the 2019 proposed Medicare rule changes are that our reimbursement in the state is unique in that much of it is capitated to managed care organizations or medical groups. Most of those contracts are tied to using Medicare as a base. So we have a significant concern about how those changes will take place, how implant reimbursement may or may yeah. not change related to the device intensity. And in addition, the California work comp fee schedule is tied to the hospital outpatient department fee schedule. So we have to watch it closely and are continuing to monitor that as it evolves.
Another area regarding the 2019 rule is the change from grading us based on CPIU versus the market basket. And
right.
that has been in one of the bills that we have been pushing because we've always been measured by the CPIU, which is milk and bread and gasoline.
Right.
It has nothing to do with our industry. And so one of the proposals is to move us to the market basket, which is based on supplies and nursing salaries and such.
Much more accurate for our industry.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as we've been asking legislators for many, many years, we don't want to close the gap. We just want to stop the erosion.
Right.
So that is in the proposed bill. So we are very excited about that.
And of course, one of the big impacts from that has been increasing the distance between the HOPD rates and the ASC rates. And that's one of the reasons that we continue to lose ground because of the different systems that have been used in the past.
Exactly. And now we realize that hospitals do, you know, have higher costs because of the acute care. However, you know, we're at almost 50 cents.
Right.
You know, down. And we're paying the same for nurses, we're paying the same for supplies.
Right.
So absolutely. We're very excited about that.
Very good.
John, you have several books that our listeners may be interested in.
Yes, the first one here, which is this big tome called The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, 2017 edition. This is the most current edition of the survey guide, and it basically takes information that includes all of the conditions for coverage and the interpretive guidelines and various clarifications published by CMS and puts it in one book with a really nice index that helps you to find the answers to your questions about the regulations in ambulatory surgery centers very quickly.
Yep, everything's easy to find and it's sort of explained a little bit.
That's right. There's notations, author notes in there to make things a little bit easier to understand. Mm-hmm. And the second book is called Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide to the ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members, which I wrote in 2015 to provide owners and administrators information about how governance works in an ambulatory surgery center and what responsibilities that owners have. So if you're interested in either of these books, please go to www.reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. And you'll be able to pick them up at a very nice rate.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're recording this last part from home on Sunday. We're back from the conference. We had a great time. We just wanted to thank everybody.
That's right. Of course, we took a red eye back on Saturday night.
Yes. And
we're just now waking up, I think. What is it, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, those are tough.
Yeah, so I won't say that part was fun, but the conference was incredible. Hats off to everybody that was involved in putting that conference mm-hmm. together. We appreciate the accommodations that they made for us so that we could record this, and we were very well treated. And I think many of the speeches, many of the sessions that we attended went over very well with the audience, so I'm mm-hmm. sure that everybody took quite a bit away.
All of the sessions were really informative, and the social stuff they had going on, it was a very well put together
conference. I enjoyed the social night.
It was
night.
Very nice.
Yeah. On Thursday night. That was very nice. Got to meet some of our listeners and to talk to them a little bit about what we hope to do in the future mm-hmm. here. And it's always good to get some feedback from the people that are out there listening to us.
Yeah.
So I do, again, want to apologize for the sound quality. Unfortunately, when you're recording outside of the studio, things are not always under your control. We did get things fixed by the time Sue and I did the first part, but that second mm-hmm. part with the board of directors, unfortunately, was not the greatest
learning
quality.
Curve.
It was, yes. And we have already fixed the problem, so mm-hmm. in the future we will have the proper equipment when we're on the road, but I'm sorry to CASA that we did have some problems with that. So with that, we're going to end this episode, and I'll be back next week with our regularly scheduled biweekly episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey.
The This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, All Rights Reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.